Welcome to The Lounge, where we chat with game designers and other notable figures in the gamosphere about themselves and what they're working on. These conversations try to get inside the design philosophies and goals for their games in an effort to give you a better understanding of the how and why of what they're making. Thank you for tuning in and enjoy this episode of The Lounge. Today we're going to talk about Torg Eternity with Daryl Hayhurst, one of the designers of Torg Eternity. Daryl, welcome to The Lounge.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
No problem, no problem at all. So, Daryl, I like to ask a question about the folks who are with us before we get into this. And this is the question that I've been sort of cultivating and asking people that's kind of silly that I like to ask. What is something from high school or college that you used to do that you don't do anymore but had a huge impact and influence on yourself today?
Sure. I would actually probably be learning Taekwondo.
Oh, okay.
Took a class in college as a lark, and it changed my life significantly in that once you learn that kind of discipline and, you know, learn what you're capable of and what other people are capable of, you lose a lot of fear in many interactions. And that lack of fear has helped me tremendously, you know, whether I practice or not.
Yeah. So what did it, so it taught you a whole lot about discipline and things like that then?
Yes. Yep.
Why did you quit?
I got busy. It was a community college course that I was taking it through, and I was moving from that community college to the local university to finish my degree in education.
Hmm.
Finishing my degree in education was going to be a very, very tight schedule. I was working, you know, 18 to 22 credit hours a semester, and so I no longer had time to pursue martial arts.
Now, that makes perfect sense. Yeah, I mean, college class loads can be really demanding. I mean, especially when you're taking 18 to 22 credit hours, it's a lot of credit hours.
It was a lot. And once you're out, it's hard to get back in.
It's true. It's true. All right, let's turn our attention towards Torg Eternity.
Oh, yeah.
So at Torg Eternity, the setting of this game is that there are these High Lords. They've come from other realities, and they are now here to conquer the Earth, steal their energy, and become the Torg.
The Torg.
Yep. So it's a game about multi-dimensional reality, pulp adventure. And by pulp, I assume we're more talking about straight the two-fisted kind of pulp with a little bit of the other stuff thrown in there for fun.
Right. The main idea of the game is, you know, the baseline for it is the real world. So you've got locations that make sense to you, nations that, you know, you understand, but layered on top of that are all the essentially other genres have invaded us. So, mm-hmm. You know, the 1930s pulp serials have invaded Africa and overlaid their, you know, reality on top of it. So things, though the geography is familiar, a lot of things are different there. And, you know, so cyberpunk has taken over France. And Pellucidar in the adventure fiction, you know, of Edgar Rice Burroughs has taken over parts of America. And so as you travel around the world, the story changes on you. The type of story that you're in changes on you. And what's really cool about that is you're playing a character that comes from one of those sets of tropes. And, you know, you've kind of got your own powers that stay with you. But as you move from place to place to place, the story around you and the rules for it start to change. And so suddenly you're like, oh, man, we're going to India, and that's been taken over by the Victorian horror cosm. We're in trouble. Even though I'm a pulp serial guy, I'm in a horror movie now, and this is not good.
Here's a question, then. I'm curious about this. How do the mechanics from the different... If the mechanic shift, there's obviously some core things, like the drama deck is probably a thing that maybe shifts things, and the exploding dice thing is a thing that goes across all the stuff. You roll a 10 or a 20 on a d20, and then you get to roll some extra dice, which you're one of the designers. Shane Hensley is also one of the designers. That seems like exploding dice isn't an unnormal thing in games, but that's totally a Savage Worlds thing.
Well, and Shane would be the first to admit that Torg, the original Torg, was the first game that he did work on, and it had a huge impact on his design.
Mm-hmm.
He'd be the first guy to say, yeah, exploding dice is kind of, you know, Torg is where he kind of got his love of that from. It kind of comes full circle as he comes back around into Torg Eternity and puts back into it everything that he's learned, you know, in the last several decades.
Before I got sidetracked for a second, all the characters are these pulp archetypes, and they all probably have some specific pulp-ish rules that go with them depending on the genre that they come from or genre archetypes.
Yep.
What happens when the two-fisted pulp action hero, like the Indiana Jones type character, starts interacting with the gothic horror setting?
And that's the heart of the game. Characters have a new thing to tour called perks. And the perks are kind of their special abilities or edges, whatever you want to call it, that give them that little extra thing that they can do. Like a pulp hero might have a ray gun, and he's going to have that ray gun, and he's going to take it into the horror setting with him. But one of the other conceits of Torg, and we've talked a little bit about like how the rules can be different, you know, in different places that you go, you get contradictions. And when something that you're using does not belong in the reality that you're currently in, on a one or sometimes more on that D20 roll when you're doing things, you can disconnect. And then you lose all your powers and have to obey strictly the rules of the genre that you're within.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So, yeah, you got a ray gun that works just great until you roll that one, and then you're a victim like everybody else.
Here's a question that I have, and I think the listeners would be very interested in this. How do you make it easy on the game masters and players to realize which rules are in effect from the setting?
Every Cosm, we tried to simplify it down to 3 world laws. And only 2 of those world laws have, like, rules additions that are in effect. So, for example, like, you can normally soak damage. You can spend a possibility and soak the damage that you hit if you make a reality roll. Arorsh, because it's a horror realm, one of the world laws says you can soak damage, but if you just get a regular success, you don't soak the wounds from that. You know, just the shock.
Mm-hmm.
So you're more likely to get bloodied there.
Okay.
Every realm that we go into, there's only 2 rule effects like that. There might be hundreds of essentially what we call world laws that define the genre and all that, but only 2 of them will ever have rule impact, and 3 of them are just the big major ones that we hang adventure tropes and other things off of.
Oh, that's super clever.
Thank you. The most impactful thing the original Torg had was called the Drama Deck. And you had drama cards that controlled combat and destiny cards that players would have in their hand. And we added a 3rd type of card called the Cosm card. All of the nitty-gritty rules that might normally be attached to the, you know, world laws or might add complexity or things that you have to remember, we offloaded into these Cosm cards. And you get one when you're in the Cosm, and you got a lot of player control. Like, if you want to play that card, you're going to trigger that effect and something's going to happen. And you're usually going to get possibilities, which are like your energy for rerolls and soaking. But there are consequences to that that reinforce where you are. For example, in the Living Land, where technology just breaks down, we got one called the Law of Decay. And so rather than having a standard rule that says, oh, you got to roll this thing or your equipment breaks, you know, blah, 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 you got this Cosm card, and if someone plays it, says, oh, I'm triggering the Law of Decay, everyone gets to pick an item that just breaks at that point.
Oh, man.
And if it's a lame item, you don't get anything for it. It's like, whatever, you know, my walkie-talkie that I never use anyway has gone bad because of the Law of Decay. Well, it fine. That just happens, and we move on. If all your spare ammo rotted, well, that's probably worth 1 or 2 possibilities. You know, if your armor or your primary weapon went away, that's probably worth 3.
Mm.
It offloads all of that from a rule that the GM's got to remember to something that the players now have control over, and they can choose. Like, oh, yeah, we need some possibilities. Let's do this. And it's a good way to reinforce the way the realms work without adding a whole layer of extra rules that everyone's got to remember.
I really dig how those mechanics interact then. That's a really smooth way to drop in a card or a thing on the table for you to remember and then something for the player characters to remember.
Yep, exactly. And one of the stretch goals that I think we've already unlocked, these table tents. And the tent has got like the axiom numbers. Every Cosm's represented by certain axioms. It tells you what's legal there and what's not. And the 2 world laws with game effects. And you can just put that tent on the table. Like when we run our own games, we just made those and said, probably everyone's going to want these. But you put the tent down, it says, okay, boom, we're in the Living Land. Law of Savagery is in effect. You know, and this is what that means. Law of Life is in effect. And that's what that means. And then what's really cool is when you travel quickly from one cosm to another, you just throw another tent down on top. Or if you've got, there are mixed zones where both are in effect and you just have both on the table at the same time.
Yeah, that's really useful for people who are playing the game. I agree. I'm glad that you folks decided to put that in there.
Yeah.
I want to talk about one of the locations in specific, because it looks like you can create characters from the cosmos, like Core Earth or any of these other places like Tharkold, Pan Pacifica, the Cyber Papacy. Can we just drill down and like kind of go through Tharkold? What are like the rule things for Tharkold? I mean, it's a demon lord controlled place. They have a thing called a cult tech there.
So cult tech in the original invasion, in the 90s version of the game, they were mentioned as a cosm that tried to invade Russia, and because of psychics and some other things, their invasion failed. So they weren't part of the original launch of Tor.
Mm.
Whereas in the new version of the invasion that's happening in Tor Eternity, they do get their foothold in Russia.
Ah.
The idea behind Tharkold is almost all of the cosms are alternate versions of Earth. Some are easier to tell it's Earth than others, but in the Tharkold version, demons existed as a real thing as of thousands of years ago, and they essentially were a major faction on that world that took over the world.
Mm.
And so these demons have been running that version of the planet for 1,000 years, and humans have just been rounded up as slave, you know, chattel for that entire time. And the demons are very powerful and very smart and very lazy. And so they build this horrible cybernetic stuff called a cult tech that kind of only works because of the evil magic invested in it. And they'll implant their people, the thralls, with it, and they put it on themselves. And so they're now the techno demons, and they use it and abuse it and love it to pieces. And when they landed on Core Earth in Russia, invaders come through a maelstrom bridge, it's called. And the Russians actually nuke the maelstrom bridge that lands. So the invasion happens, but then this nuke goes off and blows this bridge into pieces. But it's all this evil, demonic, possessed cyber technology. And it's landing across northern Russia like fallout. So now you've got radiation and evil magic, you know, and demonic cybernetics pretty much just landing all across the area. They put down a new maelstrom bridge, so it doesn't even get rid of the techno demons. It's lose-lose for everybody. Both sides end up like, okay, this is a terrible idea. No one should ever nuke a storm bridge ever again. This is not good.
Oh, man.
But the characters that come out of that, then you could have humans that are using that technology that are scavenging it and salvaging it and using it on themselves to make themselves more powerful so they can fight these invaders. So you've got a type of cyborg there. You've also got the escapees from the technodemons themselves. And they just call themselves the race because since they've been dominated by the technodemons for 1,000 years, there's no longer a concept of ethnicity or nation or anything like that amongst them. Mm. They're just humans. And they've spent so long under the thumb of this magic that they've begun developing psionic powers. And the Russians were actually working, just like in the original game, it was a secret psychic program that saw the invasion coming. That's still in effect. So you've kind of got psychics, and then you've got cybernetic guys, and then you've got spies who are trying to, navigate through the middle of this whole thing. And it's a great post-apocalyptic mess.
What are the setting rules for Tharkold? What are the two rules that have the mechanic?
So you've got the law of dominance, it's called. There are different axioms in Torg, and one of them is the social axiom. And the higher the social axiom gets, the closer to utopia you are and the more psychic powers develop. Tharkold is nothing like a utopia, but it has this really high social axiom from the psychic powers, because they're very advanced in some ways. And then there's this question like, well, if they're so advanced socially, why are they such a mess? And it's like, well, it's because demons run this place, right? So your rule laws are domination and pain are the two things that like really run Tharkold. And domination, if you intimidate someone, if you take out a leader and intimidate their crew, they're just going to fall into lockstep. They're used to obeying the biggest, strongest guy. It's dog eat dog, and whoever's the strongest, they're going to follow. So Intimidation's extremely powerful because of that. And then the Law of Pain is one of our favorites, which is, again, reinforcing that dog-eat-dog, post-apocalyptic, violent world. When you cause damage to people in Tharkold, you recover your own shock. It feels good to do unto others before they can do unto you. And it's a very demonic pastime. And so the techno demons even have a thing where they'll sometimes shoot their own guys in the back just to charge themselves up because of the Law of Pain.
So the new Doom video game has a little bit of that, right? Like, go around and kill if you kill demons and whatnot, you recover health.
Doom is a really good fit for Tharkold, right? I mean, aesthetically and everything else, like, they have a lot in common.
It's a really good design because it pushes people to go and start fights in some ways, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. It reinforces the theme, right? That's what all of the world laws and cosm cards are meant to do, is to reward you for playing up what makes that place different. Like, what makes this a Tharkold story feel different from the story set in the Living Land. Play that up and it rewards you with the possibilities.
Thank you for taking the time to talk about Tharkold and a little bit about how the mechanics and the themes all tie together and the characters that come out of there. Can we talk a little bit about how the game plays when you get into a conflict situation? Because it looks like initiative is controlled with the drama deck.
Yep.
Because there's a conflict line that's kind of got the hindrances and the benefits that people get as fighting moves forward and backwards. I don't quite get how all that works, but I'm hoping that you can explain that to me.
And this is actually really similar to how it worked in the original Torg. This was one of the innovations that makes so many people love the old game. On the card, you've got a line, and at its simplest level, it's like, heroes go first, then the villains go. Or villains go first, then the heroes go. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. But then, in every round, you flip a new card that's going to tell you who's going first. In addition to that, on the conflict line, it's got these conditions. So, like, you could have a stymied condition on for one side or the other. And it's like, oh, man, everything we do this round, we got a -2 penalty. Or if there's a fatigue line, we're taking shock, and because we got tired or depressed or whatever it is. And then there's setback where more enemy reinforcements can show up, or you can lose your own friendly support. And it's like, oh, man. And those conflict lines make every fight kind of unique, because even if you fought with the same exact conditions twice in a row, the different cards would actually make the fight play out differently because these different conditions are being added and subtracted as you go.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other really key feature on that is the approved actions. There are interactions in Torg, like intimidation, which we mentioned for the demons. There's taunt, there's trick, and then there's a physical maneuver where you're kind of feinting and dodging around people. And then you've also got attack and your all-out defense. And all of these can appear on the bottom of that card as the approved action, and that also serves to control the pacing of the fight, because you get a benefit if you do the action that's approved. Like, if intimidate is approved and you intimidate someone, you get an extra destiny card.
Oh, nice. So, like, I'm looking at the Kickstarter right now. There's the You Spot a Weakness. That's the drama card.
Mm-hmm.
It says maneuver / taunt on the bottom. So if I were to maneuver or taunt one of those actions, my opponents, I would get a bonus, or I would get a destiny card.
Exactly. Exactly. You get an extra destiny card, and destiny cards are powerful. They are powerful, powerful tools. So once people figure out what they do, oh, yeah, people do those approved actions because they want more.
Yeah, and these destiny cards, you get a hand of them, you play them, and they do crazy stuff for you. These characters, they're pulp heroes, so they are a cut above. They do things that other people can't do, and they're basically fighting these lords who are trying to take over reality.
Exactly. The destiny cards, one of the sly things about them that people who aren't used to using cards like that in a role-playing game, but one of the great things that they do when you're in a combat encounter is they keep you very invested in everyone else's actions.
Mm-hmm.
When you're in combat, like in normal play, you can just play destiny cards straight out of your hand. But in combat, you can only play them once they're face down in front of you. Like, every round, you get to put one down, and it's then ready to actually be used in combat. But everyone else can see what you're playing out and see that you're building up to something. It's like, oh, man, I put down adrenaline and flurry. People can see, like, okay, he's about to go nuts. I can back him up, or I can you know, maybe play a supporter card or something like that that's gonna help you out, and you can trade your cards. So even if you happen to be like a non-combat character, and this is what's one of the other kind of really unique things about Torg, is if you play a completely non-combat character but who still can interact with people, mm-hmm. like I'm a taunter, you know, I'm a kind of face character, so I can trick and I can taunt, but I don't have a gun, I don't have anything that can do damage. All right, I can still, with the flow of the deck, be getting these extra destiny cards, be playing them in my pool. I can be trading them with other people's cards so we can really load up someone, or I can have support or other things that are going to be able to help that fight. And so I'm actually vitally involved in that battle, even though I never actually threw an attack.
I like that a lot. So here's my question. Obviously, fighting is a thing in this game. You're pulp heroes.
Yeah, it's a war. It's the possibility wars. Yeah.
So is there still like opportunities to use these cards in other situations, like sneaking into places, heists, social conflicts, to try to wrest the control of a crowd from yourself, from an enemy?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's what many of the cards are. And in fact, some of our favorites are the ones that don't have a combat utility. For example, the romance card.
Oh.
You can play that to either start a romance with an existing character, or with a bit of narrative control. You can be like, yeah, I'm playing the romance card. GM, let's make this happen. This, you know, we're going to add a character to this story, and we're going to have this element that a lot of games gloss over. And you know, there's a little sub-mechanic to that too. Like, you can spend your possibilities for whoever you're romantically entangled with.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah.
I see there's also a Nemesis Destiny card,
yes.
too.
Where
these are great things. Like, they're cool fuel for story, it seems like. I mean, they'll do cool things too, but they also seem to all have a narrative component to them.
Right. And we tried to cut that balance where if you want to just play it as a game, it works great as a game. But its primary reason is it tells cool stories. It tells mm-hmm. these cool stories of the Possibility Wars, and we want to help you do that in every way that we can.
Yeah, you hear that, folks out there? It tells cool stories, and that's what we love from Mr. Ectomark Productions. So, the Cosmos cards, they are also a little bit like these Destiny cards, but they're tied way more into the particular setting that you're in right now, the particular area of the world, right?
Exactly. So, yeah, since the Destiny cards are universal, they have to apply kind of no matter where you are, whereas the Cosmos cards is where we could draw back and very specifically reinforce exactly the tropes and themes of each Cosm. And when you move to a Cosm, if you still had a Cosm card, well, you throw it in and you get a new card based on the Cosm that you went into. And we talked a little bit about some of the things they do. Some of the other ones are, not all of them are get possibilities for having something bad happen to you. Like the Core Earth Cosm cards are all Core Earth, you know, because Core Earth is trying to stave off these invaders, right? Mm-hmm. That's where Storm Knights mm-hmm. come from, is the energy of Earth channeling into anyone who's going to step up and defend it. And the Core Earth Cosm cards reinforce that. So, and Core Earth is not just our reality. Core Earth is like action movie reality.
that's great.
So like all that cinematic action that flavors every aspect of the game kind of comes from Core Earth. And they've got Cosm cards like Lucky Break, where your badge or a book that you were carrying takes that, you know, 4 damage hit instead of you and you get away scot-free. It's like, oh yeah, that's a total action movie thing that can happen. That's what that Cosm card's gonna do for you.
Yeah, I already know a few people I need to like just go and tweet at and tell, you should get this game because it's right in your wheelhouse of games that you want to play. There's a game that we all like to play, or a lot of us like to play, called Action Movie World, because we're all part of the Apocalypse fans. This fits right into that niche of all that stuff. It's great.
And it's very much like, if you were to do this with an Apocalypse engine, you'd have different moves. You'd have like a special move for each Cosm, essentially. You'd have your base moves for fighting the war, and each Cosm would add a couple of moves based on those world laws. And that's, you know, we're approaching that in a different way, of course, but that's what we're going for thematically.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, we have the possibilities too, which is like you can play them to roll extra dice or absorb damage, but they're also probably used to charge powers and whatnot, or, you know, help give you some narrative control about certain things.
That is exactly it. And we try, so you'll use them enough for dice and soaking that, you know, any other benefit. But there are a few powers that do require possibilities to trigger, and they tend to be a big deal when they do happen. for example, some of the leadership abilities, you can use possibilities to alter the cards on the drama deck. You know, like, oh, you know, the drama deck comes up and we've got a setback. Yeah, I'm spending a possibility and I'm barking a few orders, and no, that setback does not happen.
Oh, nice. There you go.
Yeah, I love that ability.
So is there anything I missed about the game? I think we hit the setting, we hit the characters, we hit a bunch of the rules and how the game works.
It's an endless rabbit hole that you can go down. So we've hit the major beats, and what we really hope is that people come on to the Kickstarter, ask questions. We're there, we're waiting to answer, and you know, hopefully people get to experience it and join the fun.
Yeah, so let's talk about that Kickstarter a little bit. So for $30, you can get all of the PDF stuff, and that is the Eternity Rulebook, the Drama Deck, 16 character archetypes, which, by the way, I love this archetype idea, and if I'm looking at some of the images and whatnot, and those character sheets, are those the archetype character sheets, or are those just pre-gens? I can't quite see them all.
The archetypes are basically pre-gen characters, but you can customize them quite a bit and remain within the archetype. This is actually something that came from the original Torg that, like, I personally loved to pieces. I loved grabbing the old Torg books, and at the back, they'd always have, like, their prefab character that had everything but a few skills filled in, and a cool picture, and a little story, like, this is who this person is. That gave me a hook into some of the cosms that were a little less accessible otherwise. You know, where it's like, I'm not quite sure what I'm playing in a, you know, cybernetic, cyberpunk story run by the Catholic Church. What? But when you see the characters that live there, you're like, oh no, now I know who I am and what I do. And we wanted to definitely keep that for Torg Eternity with the archetypes.
No, I love it. So then there's those as a good starting point to, like, flesh out, or you can just build from scratch if you want to.
Absolutely build your own, yep.
Yeah. You get some status token PDFs, the status shock and wound counters in PDF, and pretty much everything in PDF, including all the digital stretch goals. But if you want a lot of this stuff in print, it looks like it's $70, right?
And what we don't want to skip over is the one step up from that basic digital is for $20 extra, we throw in every PDF ever done that we could get our hands on.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, one or two missing, but yeah, almost everything from the old original Torg Invasion. There's a lot of cool stuff in there.
I'm looking at it. It's something like it's like 40 or 50 books, and it's like $130 value, but you get all of it. It's really a really cool thing that you folks are doing, putting that together for people for just a very small amount of money.
Yeah, and especially because this is not necessarily a reboot of Torg. Like, the system's been updated, and this is a different invasion, but, like, our conceit is the other invasion in the 1990s, that happened. That all played out. And because Torg is all about, you know, infinite realities and possibilities, like, we might start seeing some story elements cross over between those two invasions. So,
yeah. So it's really the $120 value. That's where you get pretty much everything in print, right? You get the cards, the dice, all the things that you would really need, the physical things that you really need to play.
If you're just gonna play, the player package is kind of the baseline. This is the easiest way to do it. If you're gonna be running the game, you should go at least GM, because that's going to give you, again, we tried to be careful to give people, like, the what they needed, you know. So it's like, all right, if you just need this to run, here's what you can get away with. And a lot. Now, I strongly recommend the Delphi Council cargo box, because that's got everything, and there's a lot of cool stuff in that for not that much more. But
also, the cargo box looks awesome.
It is. It's going to be really cool, the packaging. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you wanted to, I mean, people love pretty books, right? Like, especially when they're leatherette. So for like $25, you can get a blue leatherette deluxe edition. And for $50, you can get the red leather limited edition.
Yes. And the limited is for the Kickstarter only. We're only going to make those based on how many orders that we get. The limited edition will be available after the Kickstarter. We were torn on whether to limit it to the Kickstarter or allow some to be after, and that's why there's two. We decided, why not both? We'll have one that's Kickstarter only, that's limited, and then one that's the cool leather upgrade that you can get afterwards, and that's just the deluxe.
Oh man, looks like you got miniatures as add-ons now too. That's great.
We do, yes. This is kind of new territory for us, but the sculpts look amazing for them. The prototypes are really cool, and hopefully this all comes out, you know, as well as we think it will, and we'll do more and more as we go forward.
Man, you've unlocked so many stretch goals already too, because I mean this has been a wildly successful Kickstarter. I mean, we all expected it to kind of be wildly successful when we heard Torg was coming back. So,
well, you never know though. Right? Because a lot of people loved Torg, but you never know if you're going to be able to tap into that same audience, if people are still going to care. I mean, and that's kind of what Kickstarter is for, right? So you can put it out there and ask, do people still care? Are people still interested? And happily, yes, people are still interested. It's like, yay!
You're currently working on a bunch of things, because it's really nice how you've set it up so that these different little sets of stretch goals are kind of broken up to where they kind of fit.
Yeah.
So the Storm Breaks Part 2 is done, actually. It's the Storm Breaks Part 3, which is a fiction thing.
Yeah, it's Ed Stark is writing those. They're novelettes. Because the original Torg actually launched with novels. We wanted to pay some homage to that. And some people don't care about fiction. Some people love it. So for those that love it, we wanted to have a fiction offering for this.
Yeah, with another pledge or two, the Cosm table tents will be a thing. That's like the very next thing that'll get hit.
Yeah, I think we've got the PDFs for those already, and this is the physical, like, we'll print them up and put them in the cargo box.
Man, and there's so much stuff already, like, I mean, so many people. Steve Kenson's writing on this, Ross Watson, Robert Schwab, Monica Valentinelli, John Wick's in there. Some of the originals, Bill Slavisek's in there already. Man, there's so many people working on this thing. It's great.
Yep, Greg Gordon. There are so many people involved in this that I'm so proud to be working on the same project with these people. It's just amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the Kickstarter. I mean, the other backer level was already sold out. It was $1,000.
We couldn't believe that people jumped on those as quickly as we did. Like, we kind of offered that thinking, well, maybe there's a couple of, like, hardcore Torg fanatics out there. No, no, those went fast. We're going to be trying to make that Delphi Council seat the coolest thing ever. We're going to be reaching out to those people. To, you know, they're going to have their own characters, and they're actually going to be part of the meta plot, you know, as the war progresses. They're going to be doing Council things, and that's one other difference between this one and the, you know, original invasions. In the original invasion, the Delphi Council was kind of a shadowy behind the scenes organization, whereas in this one they are absolutely an upfront, and they're a force that, you know, that's helping the Storm Knights. Like, almost all of the missions are coming from the Delphi Council now.
This is a really cool setting, a really cool game for those folks who don't know what Torg is, because I didn't really know until I started looking into it. I never played Torg. If folks are interested in more, you can see the gameplay on the Kickstarter. There's a Let's Play Torg video.
Featuring yours truly.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a good versus evil vibe here, and the evil isn't exactly working together, so you can just kind of go around the world defeating evil after evil after evil.
Well, the evil's not going to be that easy to defeat.
Well, of course it's not, because otherwise what would be the fun, right?
Yeah, they've got some tricks up their sleeves. Give them time.
Well, Daryl, thank you so much for taking the time and talking to me about Torg Eternity. I'm thrilled with how well it's done so far. I know I have a lot of friends who are very excited about this game and can't wait to get it in their hands. I hope the rest of the Kickstarter goes exceptionally well and that you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a blast.
The Lounge is a Misdirected Mark production, the media arm of Encoded Designs.